Extravaganza.
Hello and welcome back to the Horror Pop Extravaganza. This is it. This is the place where the macabre meets the mindful. Bringing these two things together that are traditionally on opposite ends of each other, but we're bringing them together for the show, man. We're making a new thing. I am Pops Ghostly. This is episode 19, and with me, as always, is...
Scott Twatty.
Scott, how are you today, Scott Twatty? Or do you just go by Twatty or Twat for short?
Sometimes I go by Squatty Twatty.
Oh, okay. Squatty Toddy. Squatty Twatty. Yeah, that's hard to say.
It's hard to say, especially three times fast.
Right. And if you do it in the mirror, then he shows up behind you and is just standing there with bologna on his nipples. And it's a very weird experience for everyone. So we got to jump into this thing, though, because I know we're going to want to talk about this. We had mentioned last week we're going to do Fright Night, and we talked this morning and we're like, yo, I didn't get a chance to watch Fright Night again. And, you know, I'll own that one. Like, I didn't get the chance to watch it. And I don't want to do the movie the disservice, though. Like, I would never just show up and be like, hey, let's fuck it. So, but we've always had a back burner of stuff of like, hey, this is some shit we're going to hit for sure. So we started chatting back and forth. And Scotty Twatty and I went back to 1996 to talk about, I mean, really... the movie that brought horror out of the shithole it was in from like 88, 89. And, you know, and there's some gems here and there for sure. It's not like all of it was trash, but for the most part, we get up to 1996. And when you need horror reinvented, you go to one person, Mr. Wes Craven, and you say, hey, do your thing, dude. I don't know. You just make magic. I don't know how to explain it, but whatever that man touched. I mean, there were some duds in there, too, but. He just had this vision, you know, that was outside of everything else that everybody else was doing. You know, you had the slashers and you had your Jason and your Mikey. And he's like, yo, I'm going to make a fucking dream monster that can only kill you in your sleep and shit. Completely different than everything else. Even, you know, The Hills Have Eyes. Last House on the Left is fucking brutal, dude, in like every way possible. Come mid-90s, we were in this weird place with horror, and Wes shows up and has this little thing called Scary Movie, and he's like, I want to make this thing. They ended up changing the title, of course, you know, 7-8 sequels later. I don't know where we're at. You know, the TV series, we've had so much of this franchise, and if you don't know by now, of course, we're talking about Scream. And Scream, yeah, it changed the world, dude. It changed the world of cinema. In an awesome way. But before we get into all the details and how and why it changed everything, Twatty, why don't you throw the creative team out there, everybody who helped to make this thing possible.
Here comes Scream from 1996, rated R, 1 hour and 51 minutes. And we have an amazing cast consisting of Neve Campbell as Sydney. Probably, like, I mean, she's like the final girl of this series, still keeping it strong today. This is where we get into the, like, now we're to the point where she wants that fucking fat greenbacks, you know, that she hasn't gotten like her whole series. And so her character's so coming
I was
and going.
Just getting a shirt. I have two closets, like one small one that sits in this room and then one in the bedroom. And this one, I keep all my hoodies and shit in, but the whole top is just full of masks and whatnot. And I've got a ghost face mask just sitting up in the closet, fucking signed by Neve Campbell right down the mouth. Oh, it's, yeah. I need to find a place for that. That'd be a good thing to have out.
On your face, dude. Just wear it to work and shit.
Neve Campbell signed this. Don't worry about it. Fucking doing fucked up tattoos all over because I can't see straight and shit. I'm just like, ah. What's your favorite scary movie, bitch?
You just say that from like behind a curtain before you do a tattoo and then like pop out and that shit. And they're like, is it too late to turn back? It's too late to turn back.
Right. It's never too late.
Let's see. Who else do we have in this? Courtney Cox, the flavor of the moment. Was this before Friends or after Friends? Right in the middle of Friends, yeah?
Yeah, I feel like it was somewhere in the center. Yeah, like Friends had kind of already been established because, well, hang on 1 second. Hey, Siri, what year did the TV show Friends first debut? 94. So yeah, this was 2 years after Friends.
So she's like right when Friends is starting to like really pick up and become like a cultural thing. Playing Gail Weathers, the shitty ass reporter who somehow finds a place in her heart, even though she's kind of a horrible person. Dude,
we all love Gail. You cannot love Gail.
My favorite character of the series and one of my favorite actors of all time, Mr. David Arquette as Deputy Dewey.
I love him. Dude, he is such an underrated talent.
Oh, he is.
He really, you know, and I think a lot of them, though, this cast that you're naming right now would follow this franchise for decades. You know, it's been like 20 fucking years and they're still showing up and getting killed off on screen and shit like that. But at this time, I don't think a lot of people knew a ton of these. Like, I knew Courtney Cox from like Masters of the Universe. I feel like, you know, I saw her face.
Right.
Like, I knew her face and shit, but I wasn't like a big Friends person in 96.
No, me neither. These were all TV guys, pretty much.
Right. And Neve Campbell, yeah, had done
Party
and
Five. Neve,
like you said, though, her final girl, like Sydney Prescott, is just a badass dude. Yeah. I love Sydney Prescott. She's so fucking cool. But everybody up to this point was relatively, I don't want to say unknown, but, you know, coming up in the world of Hollywood.
Yeah, I'd say David Arquette was probably in the most stuff, like probably the biggest name.
And they, you know, I think a lot of them, and that's another thing that, you know, this is Wes Craven right here, you reading this off. He had the eye for young talent, man. He could find it, you know, after Nightmare on Elm Street and shit, he was... just, I don't know. He just could figure it out and say, yes, this person can act. She'll be a good, like, Heather Langenkamp is arguably one of the strongest final girls of all the originals. She was tough from the beginning.
Right.
I don't know, Glenn, you're the fucking jock. Get a bat or something. Just hit this fucker when I bring him out of my dream. She was tough, you know? She was cool. And we see a lot of that in Sydney as well. A very strong character who doesn't need to be saved. She can hold her own.
Right, right. Let's see. We've got Skeet Ulrich, who's just a beautiful, sexy man. He just like drips charisma.
He was the Johnny Depp dude of this movie.
Totally. A little unknown actress named Drew Barrymore playing Casey. And I mean, this started a thing in horror movies of like, get that cameo in the opening scene. And she's not going to make it through the whole movie.
It was on the poster. She's front and center.
Right.
You know what I mean? We didn't see it. I mean, you saw it in Psycho, but that was fucking 36 years prior to this, where they had brought in, you know, Janet Leigh, huge name that everybody knew, and then kill her ass off in the shower, and nobody even believed it. They said in the theater, people were like, nope, she's alive. She can't be dead.
Right.
But this gets like thrown in our face from second one, and it's like, holy fuck, because she's the biggest name in this.
Right.
Hands down. She's a fucking A-list at this time, you know, top notch. Drew Barrymore has been in the cinema zeitgeist since she was a child, dude. E.T. We've all known this face. And so it's the one familiar one where you're like, this one ain't going to get killed, right?
Right.
Turn it on its head.
Yep. Subvert expectations from the very beginning.
Right.
Here's a guy who you wouldn't know him from his face, but you wouldn't have this franchise without this person, and that's Roger Jackson as the phone voice.
Yes, dude.
I can only think of a handful, maybe, of like voices that you have to have, and one of them was from last week with Child's Play.
Yeah,
like that. Chucky's not that guy.
Movie voice. We talked about movie guy voice movie too, guy like voice, so yeah. Like trailer guy voice.
Yeah,
so iconic. You're right, though. You can't have this like ghost face. It did change a little bit here and there. You know, they would switch up where you could just replicate voices and it was the exact voice of the person you were being. But in this one, it was creepy, man.
Exactly.
Super creepy voice.
Exactly. We have a beautiful, delicate Rose. Rose McGowan.
We do, dude. Everybody, like, remembers her death in this movie. When we all saw it the first time, it was just like, yeah, I remember seeing this in the theater, dude. Fuck, it was so good.
It gives me PTSD because I got crushed in a garage door when I was a little kid playing Indiana Jones, went for the slide, just right underneath, dude, came down and smashed me, dude. And so every time I see this scene, I'm like, no.
Well, you should also say that shit wouldn't happen because garage doors have stops on them where they hit something, and she would not have been pulled up and crushed in the garage.
I may be the reason why the garage doors now have laser stops on them.
How much horsepower did that fucking door opener have, dude?
It was crushing the fuck out of me, dude. Like, my back was cracking and I thought it was breaking. Like, it was pushing the air out of my chest so I couldn't breathe. My dad comes in.
I'm talking about more being able to pick a human body up and crush it in the frame of...
I'm still in my moment, dude. I'm like,
we need to talk about this after the show. We'll do a little therapy session and fucking work this thing out.
Yeah, dude, I got to get this out. Like, I'm back there. Yeah, but Rose, that sucked for her, too.
Right. And, you know, it sucks. We would learn so much later on this kind of boom of Miramax that was happening at the time and the fucking Weinsteins, dude. And,
dude, those guys. Fucking bastards.
Only one, really. I don't think the other brother ever really did any bad shit like that. It was Harvey, at least my understanding.
I don't know, dude. There was those two guys. If they were ever shared a room together, they fucking know what little brother's up to, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Anyway, we got somebody who I love today still, who's still killing it, Matthew Lillard. Please,
Matthew Lillard, yes.
Yeah, dude. Like, just
I was just watching right before we started. My kid was watching the Five Nights at Freddy's movie.
Yeah.
And he thought it was rated the scene where he first pops up and they're in the office. And I'm like, fucking, I love you, dude. Like, I hope I get to meet him one day at a convention.
Oh, me too,
I
dude.
I really hope so, dude. Because he, you know, and everybody who I have met who has met Matthew, they're like, he's the nicest fucking dude. And I'm like, that makes it even better. Like, that's so cool. Because his Shaggy is one of my personal favorite Shaggies, dude.
The best.
In all the animated stuff, yeah, that he's done, he's so good. In everything that he does, he shows up and slays it. And yeah, Matthew Lillard for the fucking win all day.
SLC Punk, dude.
Good. So good. I haven't watched that in probably 5, maybe even 10 years. I need to go back and revisit SLC Punk.
Yeah, that's why you got to revisit every like 10 years or so, dude, and just be like, right. Movies used to be awesome.
Right. Movies used to be the shit. And then I just recently watched the new Aquaman, and I'm like, fuck.
Dude, that was fucking rough, bro. I was very like, I mean, it was great because like it's one that's great to like fucking take an edible and laugh your ass off at. But as far as like, this is the crown, the last crown in the jewel that was the DCU. Like, fuck off, dude.
However, though, I did watch, I only got to watch half of it before work yesterday, but I started watching Wonka and really enjoying that.
Wonka's really good, dude. And my kids loved it.
Yeah, I bet. I'm like halfway in and I'm like, man, you guys like captured the Roald Dahl essence.
Right.
Perfectly. You know, with like the mean ass lady who fucking tricks him into the contract and shit and all that. I'm like, these feel like, you know, Roald Dahl, like Matilda characters or fucking James and the Giant Peach characters, all these things. I'm just like, man, you did a cool thing. What's his name? Fucking, is it Timothée Chalamet? He fucking slays it as a Wonka, dude. Like, just good. Has that zest that you saw at the end of the original when they're in the glass elevator, that joy, you know, that. But anyway, continue. We're not here to talk about
somebody who's another great and has really probably had the most powerful career of all of them. Jamie Kennedy.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say Henry fucking Winkler. No, Jamie Kennedy. But I think because wasn't he behind Robot Chicken? Was he attached?
No, he did it with him, yeah. So I mean, he was on.
Oh yeah, he did stuff. But you're right, he was like a Pauly Shore, like just was everywhere in the '90s, and then
Malibu's never. Most Wanted. Come on.
Yeah, dude. Actually, Malibu's Most Wanted had its moments, so it was kind of funny here and there.
He's like, and then he picked up in the Tremors franchise, dude, just out of nowhere.
Oh, that's right. He was in a bunch of those. I've seen all the Tremors, dude. And there's like 8 of them now, I think. But
yeah, <dude.
laughs> shit's good.
And then, you know, Henry Winkler's not even on this list, dude. Not on the main cast list.
What?
Yeah, not even in there, dude. There's dudes that don't have a picture that are on here, but not Henry Winkler.
That's weird because he's such a, I mean, he's not in there a ton, but he's still.
Yeah, man, he's the school principal. Because
he gets fucking killed. Yeah, and he gets killed. I mean, that was Henry Winkler, right? Like, my mind's not playing fucking tricks on me.
No,
this isn't a Nala effect or whatever it is.
No, man. No, he was in there.
Okay.
This thing's directed by Wes Craven and written by a little guy named Kevin Williamson of Dawson's Creek fame.
Who would fucking destroy the 90s with horror, dude. Like, he, I mean, he wrote Halloween H2O. He would bring the voice of the 90s really was him, and he was the successful voice of the 90s. Like, if you look at dudes writing credits, you'd be like, oh, shit.
Right.
Like, you were attached to a lot of really successful, very successful things.
Yeah, and he goes from, like, Dawson's Creek to, like, Teaching Mrs. Tingle. Like, all these, like, horror and then, like, the most, like, wholesome shit that was, like, on TV, yeah. You know? You ready to hear about what this movie's about?
Yep.
All right, here it comes. A year after the murder of her mother, a teenage girl is terrorized by a mass killer who targets her and her friends by using scary movies as part of a deadly game.
That doesn't do that. I mean, it's good, but it's not. I what? Feel like that.
What?
I don't know, dude. Like, it's there, but this just feels like so much bigger than that. It's, I don't know. So in my bigger mind, this should be like 3 pages of writing. Like, the world of horror sucked at the time. Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson showed up. And it's just like,
when you thought there was nothing left to be afraid of, Scream.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Okay. So let's talk about this thing, dude. We open up with Drew Barrymore. And we don't have to spend a ton of time on a lot of these because I know this is shit that even if you, I mean, it's been parodied so many fucking times.
Yeah, dude.
You know, it's everywhere. You know this opening sequence, but at the time in the movie theater when this first released, this was unreal, dude. I remember just being like, holy shit, they're talking about scary movies. Like, these are my people. You're talking about my people. Like, this killer is my people.
Right.
Because he knows all of this useless horror movie knowledge. But she's making popcorn and shit and is like, phone rings. Oh, hey, who is it? And at first, she's very lackadaisical about it. Oh, just making some popcorn, going to watch a movie. What's your favorite scary movie? Da, 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 da. They go on for a little bit, hang up, calls back, and now she's freaked the fuck out. And she's like, I got a boyfriend. He plays football. He's coming over here. And he's like, oh, Steve, like, turn on the patio light. And this motherfucker's out there with tape all over his face, bloodied up and shit. Now she's real scared. And that's where the game comes in. Do you want, you know, you play a game, you get this right, answer these questions, I won't kill Steve. Who's the killer in Halloween? Ah, Michael Myers, right, you got it right, da-da-da. Who's the killer in Friday the 13th? This is the one she gets wrong. Jason Voorhees, nah. In the original, it was Mrs. Voorhees. The cat and mouse game ensues. We get our first look at Ghostface, which is a cool fucking mask. And that's where this thing succeeds as well.
Yeah, they created a new iconic monster when it had been so long since we'd had one.
Right. It, at least like 10, 15 years. And this monster, you know, it's more expressive than Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees. It's got this long open mouth and, you know, big droopy eyes that kind of come down. It's looking at you more and there's personality behind it, which maybe they went that direction because of the voice. You know, you had a voice with this character. And if it was completely dead face, who knows how that would have played. But the ghost face mask is awesome, just white. And then he wears a shiny, sparkly cloak that goes over top of some black pants and some work boots.
Easily a costume you can pick up at a Halloween store. You know, it wasn't like a Freddy Krueger where you had to put all these pieces together if you wanted to cosplay. You know, you just, and it was, I don't know when Ghostface became the name of it, because at first, for the longest time, it was just the Scream Killer. I don't know when they started calling it Ghostface.
I don't know either. That's a good, maybe the second movie, because don't they mention it with the Stab movie coming out? And they're like, get your ghost face mask or some shit.
I don't know. We're going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, we'll have to dig into that a little bit. But he ends up getting her in the most brutal way. And I actually have a picture signed, and I can't remember his name. Fuck, forgive me. The guy who did all the effects. But it's him standing next to the body of Drew, and he signed it for me. And I was like, that's cool, dude. Because the effects in this are just top-notch.
Yeah, dude. Kills. This is the first time I remember, like, intestines coming out and shit and being like, shit. And it's so fast. They just show it for a second, but...
Right. But it sticks in your head. You're like, dang, she's hanging there gutted. But what makes it so tragic is her mom and dad had just pulled into the driveway and she's crawling. And then Ghostface comes in this like slow motion, you know, over top of her and just starts to mutilate her. they go into the house, and the music's really good too. The score for this movie is phenomenal all the way through, like these, you know, low swells that come up, and then you get this fucking kind of Western red right hand and shit going on when the cops wandering around.
This is a great soundtrack. We talk about that a lot, but this is one of those ones that was like all songs I'd never heard before, but like it set a mood, and I was like, I'm going to get the soundtrack like immediately after I get out of the theater.
Yeah, it was so good. I had a lot of horror movie soundtracks from this time because they were just great. So they leave, her parents go in, popcorn's burning. Where's our daughter? Casey. And they go outside and see her hanging from the tree with her guts everywhere. Switch to, I want to say we're now going to school, or we might meet Nev for a minute with her dad at the beginning. We might meet Sydney for a second before going to school. But either way, we get to school and we meet our core group of teenagers.
The cool kids, the kids that wouldn't let me hang out with them.
Right.
Scott Body was not sitting on the fountain in front of school hanging out with the sexy chicks. Nope.
Nope, was not doing that. So I wouldn't have to worry about getting killed either, though. All the other kids in that high school were all right. The kids that didn't go to that party and shit, they all live.
That's true. Fine. Yeah, you can stay home on a Friday night. You're going to be safe, kids.
So you've got Sidney Prescott, Rose McGowan, well, Nev Campbell, Rose McGowan, Skeet Ulrich, Matthew Lillard, and Jamie Kennedy. And those are our primary group of people that we follow throughout this. We get a lot of more people in and out. It's relatively close to, or maybe it was the same exact day that her mom had died. And we get a little bit about that backstory. I want to say she even talks to her dad about it. You know, it's been a year or some shit. But we start to learn
forget. We learn of Cotton Weary at the very beginning in a news broadcast, who is another amazing actor that is not on the opening page.
How's Lee Shriver not on the opening page, dude?
Weird, dude.
Because he is great.
IMDb,
he is
great. You're bullshit. Fuck you, IMDb. I am F you.
I am fuck you. Fuck you, IMDb. So, yes, he's being released because he was acquitted, but he was convicted of killing Sydney's mom.
Right.
She had seen him, and Sydney was the reason that he was convicted, because she had seen Cotton fleeing the scene. Right?
No. Well, Cotton was having sexual relations with her mother.
Yeah, he was having an affair with her mom.
And I think she finds out about that, and then she was the one that like connected him to being guilty to the murder, but she doesn't know anything that she doesn't know for sure that he's the murderer. She just thinks she's more upset that her mom was cheating. I think
she saw someone leaving. She saw something happening and said it had to have been Cotton because they were having, I swear, I could be wrong, but maybe not. I don't know. Everybody's quick to learn that, yo, fuck, did you hear about Casey Becker? Like, she got fucking gutted, dude. And they're making jokes about it and shit. And I want to say Stu, even Matthew Lillard, makes a joke about, like, you know, Sydney's mom or something about murder. And Rose McGowan slaps him like, shut the fuck up, Stu, you fucking idiot. Too soon. Too soon, Stu. And they are all very 90s, but believable 90s. It's not a fake, like, you believe all of these characters and who they are. And I think that's where Kevin Williamson shines a lot. He writes good characters.
He was the 90s, like, John Hughes. Like, he was an older dude who got that younger generation. He got the way that they, like, talked and the way that they hung out. And it didn't seem fake. Like, a lot of writers in the 90s would like write for the youth. And you're just like, nobody talks like this
ever. And so they start having this debacle or conversation about that. And then Gail shows up pretty quick.
Yeah, she shows up to the school because like this is going to be a media blitz.
Right. And Gail had won her success on the book that she had written about the Woodsboro murders. Mm-hmm. I think it might even been called the Woodsboro murders or some shit. But so Gail made her whole career on this thing. And she shows up and it's like, Sydney, blah, 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 blah. And she fucking punches her in the face. Or maybe this was after they're at the school for a little while.
Maybe. But pretty early on, we see Sydney. We meet Gail for being a bitch, you know?
Right. For asking, like, do you think this connected to your mom or some shit? Bam, bitch went down. Like, Rose McGowan says it a few times. Do you think this was this? Bam, bitch went down. But No, because this is after Sydney gets attacked at her house when her dad's gone. Because she goes and stays with Rose McGowan after she was at the jail and then gets the call and believes that it's not her boyfriend. This thing, and that's where this thing shines the best, is it was so fucking twisty turvy, dude.
Yeah.
You never knew who the fuck was who or who the killer is. Yeah.
There was a long time I thought it was Dewey.
I thought it was everybody throughout the whole thing. I'm just like, oh, it's this. It's got to be that. Because they do such a good, you know, planting the seeds here and there. Hey, follow this little one. Follow that little one.
Yep.
Dewey is Rose McGowan's brother, and they call him Deputy Dewey or Deputy Dipshit, as she calls him. But he is a local town deputy who still lives at home, but has the biggest heart on the planet, who will fall in love with, or is already in love with Gail. Cause the first time they meet, he's like, I watch your show, you know, every morning or something. You're even prettier in real life. Something along those lines. So Dewey, we've met Dewey. Who haven't we met yet? But Sydney gets attacked at home because she, and we learn though that Sydney's not going to give in to sexual temptation.
Yeah, Skeet shows up at her window and he's like, hey, baby, like, didn't you always wanted to crawl into a girl's window? Did you ever do that shit?
Many, many, many times.
Oh, fuck, man. I never got that. Like, I always wanted that. I even did it in one of my movies so that I could do it.
Calm down, Tarantino. Quit putting feet in your mouth. Okay. But yeah, he comes crawling in and is like, yo, we've been dating for a year. Like, let's fuck get it on. And she's like, no, I'm not ready for that shit. How about, he's like, or she says, how about settle for PG-13? And like flashes him, but we don't see it. It's from behind. So you only see, and he goes back out the window. Her dad comes in. Hey, what was that? Oh, nothing. And okay, I'm getting ready to leave. I'm going out of town. He takes off, and at some point she gets attacked at home, but ends up fighting off the killer. Like, and she walks right outside, though. He's right, like, I'm outside your front door. She walks out like, what up, pussy?
Yeah.
You want something? Like, come get it. I'm right here, motherfucker. She's screaming outside. She's not afraid of this. You know, she doesn't cower. She doesn't back away from it. But then her and Ghostface get in this good quarrel. She ends up getting away, calls the cops. The cops show up, and she starts to suspect her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. She thinks, like, hey, you were just around and shit, you know, or where were you when I was doing this, yada, yada.
One of the things I liked about this was, like, the scream killer was so fast and furious. None of this, like, sulking around or slowly walking. Like, he would chase your ass down, but he would also get his ass whooped.
He was very vulnerable. Yes. You know, you could kick him in the dick or kick him into the wall, you know, hit him with the door, and it would be like fall down on the ground, knocked out for a few. And again, great killer, dude. That's why we're still talking about it today, because it was such a great, great, great job across the board. They end up at the cop shop, and she gets a call from the killer while she's in the police station. And that's what convinces her that it's not her boyfriend, because he was in lockup, I think. And there is that gray line, like, what do you got a cell phone for, kid? And now today, everybody's got a fucking cell phone. You'd be hard pressed to find somebody without one. But that's their primary means of evidence, is like, you got a cell phone. You're guilty as fuck.
Only criminals have cell phones.
So she goes home with Rose McGowan. They go to school the next day. Dewey's on the case. And at school, she runs into the Ghostface killer again, or the scream killer again, in the bathroom. Because there's like some girls talking shit about her. Like, oh, can you imagine? Oh, sad fucking piece of shit, that Sidney Prescott. It was vile. And she's in the stall. And then next to her, it really cool scene where we see some feet come down and then the cloak, the bottom, because it's ridged. You know, it's got little triangles cut out all the bottom and it comes down. She's getting chased around, gets away this time, runs into her boyfriend, and is like, this is where they have that moment where it couldn't have been you because da-da-da-da-da. And then some kids are, like, running through the hallway, like, you know, dressed up as Scream because, like you said, and I believe they even mention it in the movie, this is a mask that could be bought at any store anywhere.
Right.
So there's no way to trace it back to the costume because they're everywhere. And so these kids go running around, and that's where we get Henry Winkler as the principal. And he's like, you fucking little bastards. Like, I should expel you. He's cutting the mask up with scissors and stuff. They end up leaving. He gets killed in a cool scene coming right out of the, it's like a closet, right? Or a coat closet, some kind of curio or something like that.
I love they do that. Set that whole scene up in the office, though, where he's like walking around and then he sees the janitor dressed up like Freddy Krueger and he goes, hey, Fred.
Right. And it is Wes Craven, though, is playing that role.
That's right. Yeah.
That is Wes in that role, which is cool. Yeah, dude. So good. So he ends up dying and we're going to have a big party out at Stu's house. Yeah, right.
They do a curfew because the killer's out and they're like, all right, you got to have a curfew. And I had a curfew when I was a kid. Like the cops would pick you up if you were out after 11.
Oh yeah. Dude. Yeah. Yeah. No, they would for sure. Stop, flashlights in your face. Like, yep. What the fuck are you doing out here?
Yep.
So they're all going to go party at Stu's house. We've run into Jamie Kennedy, who has, I don't know if he started talking about it at the video store. Like, yeah, there's rules and shit you got to follow.
I like envied him. I was like, I want to work at a video store.
It's still the best job I ever had in my life was the movie theater and the video store, dude. Yeah. If I could open a tattoo shop / video store, I would be so down and just collect all the VHSs and DVDs I could and just be like, come hang out in here, have CRT TVs up in the corner, just playing on loops, you know, fucking dude. VHSs and shit.
You're onto something, buddy.
Yeah, I might be. They do all end up at Stu's house. Gail's trying to sneak in with Dewey because Dewey's going to go out there because Rose McGowan says, hey, we're all going to be out here. Don't worry about it. But Dewey still wants to check in on him. Gail, can I tag along and come with you? And in the meanwhile, I don't know if Cotton, did he show up or we've still kind of back and forth with Cotton might be the killer somewhere. Everybody's potentially the killer.
Right.
So she's going to sneak in with a camera and place it inside. And then she's hiding out in the news van with her homie, who's like, eventually like, fuck this, dude. Like, yeah. I don't want to do this shit. But the video is on a delay, like a 30-second delay, because it's a remote thing. So Stu starts, or not Stu, but Jamie. What was Jamie Kennedy's name? Why can't I remember fucking, it was not Richie, but. Anyway, he starts explaining all the rules of horror movies, and this is what was so cool for me.
Yes.
Because this was me. Like, I would sit there and be like, what do you mean you don't fucking haven't seen it or don't understand it? Because I was that 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old kid who just sat around and watched horror movies all the time.
Right.
He's explaining the rules, and we're watching horror movies in horror movies. We're watching Halloween together, and he pauses it and is like, yo, you don't have sex. That's the number one thing. You don't fucking drink. And they're all like, yeah. And he's like, yeah. You never say I'll be right back. You don't do all these things. So they are looking at horror through that lens and saying, this is different from everything you have known. We're right. Telling you right now.
Yeah, we are aware of everything that's come before, and now this is something new.
Right. This is going to be something new, and this is going to be something different. So party starts. This is where a lot of people start to die. Rose McGowan in one of the most iconic, because she's through the doggy door, but as we had mentioned earlier, there's no way that motor would have picked her up and crushed her into the ceiling and literally snapped her in half.
I'm not so sure. I think we could myth bust this.
Find out how much she weighs and then put that in your garage door and try and open it up. I want to see what happens.
I'm not talking about my garage door. I'm saying a 1996 garage door.
Okay, let's get Adam Savage to evaluate the power of the garage door opener and Scream and see if it would crush a Rose McGowan inside of it. See if we can get that on Mythbusters. She gets crushed. Everybody ends up taking off, though, save for our core people, because they learn that the principal got murdered and was like hung up on the football field or some shit. Which is very morbid that they were all like, let's go see it. Fuck yeah. But you had to get them all out of the house.
Right.
You had to make that happen. So they're all out of the house. And Nev does have sex.
Skeet shows up. He'd been arrested and all this stuff. They thought it was him. And then it turns out Randy still thinks that it might be him. He shows up at the party and they go upstairs together. And then Nev's just had enough. as everyone knows, when a murderer is chasing you, it makes you horny. And so you've just had enough of all this horse shit and you got to go get naked.
Or if it's, if we believe the cabin in the woods lore, they're pumping pheromones into the room because this has to happen.
It has to happen. They have to have sex. Yeah. Exactly.
They have sex. Everybody's gone. Randy's just sitting on the couch by himself, fucking wasted, watching Halloween. Yeah. No, like, fucking don't do that. Don't go in there. Having a good time. And that was usually me at the end of the night, too, just sitting by myself on the couch, like, fuck it, Jason. Awesome. But Gail is watching from the truck and sees the killer take out Randy. And now Gail's... Where do they find Sydney's dad's car on that road? Yeah. And I don't. Yeah, they find the abandoned car. And so now they think it might be her dad that is killing people. Like, he never left town. Where's he been? What's going on? So Dewey ends up hooking up with Gail. They go into the house. Sydney fights off Ghostface for a while. Sydney takes, they all end up down on the ground, and that's when we learn like pig's blood and shit from Carrie when he's licking the blood off the knife. We see him, we learn there's two killers, and this was fucking mind-blowing.
Yeah, dude.
Like we had never, yeah. And if you did see two killers in a movie, it was presented as two killers from the beginning. It was usually not behind a mask. It was, you know, the chainsaw family. It was deranged or whatever, where right. You had multiple, or Last House on the Left, where you knew they were all bad. They were like a gang of bad, right. Not presented as a singular force.
Right.
And we see Matthew Lillard and Skeet Ulrich. Which I don't know how somebody would have been like, yo, the one is way fucking taller than the other one. Like, there's one scream killer that's really tall and one that's not.
And when you punch this one, he goes, zoinks.
Like, I don't know. You hit me right in the fucking junk, Scoop.
That was really good.
You cut me too deep, man. So they, but this is really cool too. They are students of horror movies.
Yes.
And this is what made it crazy. Like, oh shit. He, when he said the same shit they used for Pig's Blood and Carrie, that was only shit like me and a handful of like two people knew at that time who read Fangoria, you know, and would try and seek out all these behind the scenes shits or interviews or whatever pre-internet. But with him saying that, I was like, holy fuck, like they rigged a horror movie. They created in their world, those two made a horror movie based on all the knowledge they said they were going to shift for our now bigger thing. Like the meta in this fucker is
it's so deep. So many. And what was going on in real life at the time, because this was when you had those kids laying down in traffic because of Rudy. This is when you had that whole shit with like people saying that video games were making kids into killers and shit.
Dungeons and Dragons was fucking making you Satanist and all this stuff. You're right. Yeah. And the video games and the music, you're right. Even at the same time, everything was getting so heavily censored. And yeah, it's not the fact that you don't love your kids and you're not at home at all. And you made us all laugh at kids. It's the video games that are doing it.
Yeah. That has nothing to do with that at all.
Nothing to do with that at all. So they are going to stab each other to give each other wounds in order to say the ghost or the scream killer tried to get us. And Matthew Lillard's performance here is so good, dude. I love it, so, dude. Yeah. And again, you're talking about, you know, those characters that won't die. Like he doesn't die for a little while. He keeps fucking bebopping around. But they, so they stab each other. They've got a spot picked out where they know it'll be a good wound, but it won't kill them. And it's kind of weird. They both stabbed each other like relatively in the same space. I feel like when the cops showed up, they'd be like, eh, and you're kind of tall. Like this lines up when we put you two right in front of each other. These wounds line up perfectly. And it looks like it was the same knife and your prints are both on the fucking knife. So talk about this
in the lineup. It's just a bunch of dudes in the Scream costume. And they're like, there's like a Danny DeVito short one, and like a really tall one.
Yes. Who was it? But Lillard takes it deep and he's just like, oh man, I think he like he's losing blood fast. Yeah. And he's like, I knew you got fucking dying, man. Like, I gotta call my mom.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that
I got blood everywhere?
She's gonna be so fucking pissed at me. I love when he fucking goes, you hit me with the fucking phone, man. That's my favorite. Right
the fucking head too.
But I think in this part, I think Ulrich did it on purpose. What do you think? I think he stabbed him too deep because he wanted him dead.
Yeah. And this is something that we would see continued on. Yeah. You know what I mean? Through the franchise. Like, I want to say we saw it really big in 4 when the fucking she kills what's his name at the end. The other Culkin, the good one. I really love Rory. Is it Rory right. Culkin? Yeah, he's really good. But this is something we would see where you got the killer who has different motives than the teammate knows about.
You're right. Like,
which is something we've seen in movies forever, you know, that end of the line revenge type shit, or, hey, you didn't know, sorry about that. The best probably ever on cinema was in The Dark Knight, where he's like, ah, oh, you plan to shoot me too? He's like, no, I kill the bus driver. He's like, bus driver?
so good.
So, but when they're fighting and arguing and stuff, they had Sydney on the ground and now she gets away. Mm-hmm. And they look over and they're like, oh, fuck. Now the whole plan shot because we don't have her. Where are one of them walks out? Because I think they like walk out together, right? And they're like, it's her or it's him or some shit. And somebody's got, Gail's got the gun. And it's like, shoot, like...
Yeah, I can't remember all of the this is why we were supposed to watch the movie before we do it, but
no, you know, I feel like
there's
we're doing
a lot of pieces here because the dad's in the closet and Sydney
right,
finds
he finds him
tied up and everything, and
she finds the costume though, or the mask at least, because she comes out of somewhere at one point.
Yeah, and she's in the closet and she has an umbrella and she fucking stabs him.
Yes. And this house is cool, too. I love the layout of this place. The big stairwell going right up from the foyer, and it's just a great layout.
Yeah.
So they do have that fight at the end, but Gail does have the gun, and I know she says something about, you know, something doesn't die at the end. There's great lines in it, too. But she shoots him. He's on the ground. Dewey's okay. Dewey had been stabbed, I want to say. Everybody's kind of okay. Matthew Lillard's dead. Skeet jumps up right at the end.
Yeah, that's when she's like, in the movie, if this was a movie, he would jump up for one last scare. And then he sits up and like, even though I knew it was coming, dude, I shit my pants a little bit. Like, just one nugget came out. I was like, ah!
And then you fuck pop, pop, pop. Or one right in the forehead, maybe. Yeah. It might just be a single one. But he takes one down. And now we get a nice, like, pull out to a bird's eye shot over top of a bunch of cops and ambulances and stuff everywhere. Everybody's kind of like, Nancy and Gail are really cool together. You know, Dewey's okay. And Randy is still alive. But yeah, Randy didn't die, right? He's still alive in the second movie.
Yeah, he got stabbed, but he comes back.
Right, Randy's still alive. And her dad is okay. And we learn, you know, it's been because...
His mom was having sex with Skeet Ulrich's dad also.
Dad.
And so that was the whole like reason why this was going to happen. Yeah,
exactly. He was all pissed. He thought his dad, because he even tells her like, your mom was a fucking slut and, you know, I'd still have my dad if it wasn't for your whore mother.
Yeah.
And she's like, what the fuck, you whiny bitch? Like, it's just, you know, like, this is everything. And then it'll transform over the course of the franchise to his kids. Childs that are murderers and shit.
Yeah, it's out of control now.
But this, as we had mentioned at the beginning, changed the landscape. We would see so many things try and be Scream. You had Urban Legend. I Know What You Did Last Summer, which I Know What You Did Last Summer was fun. Urban Legend was fun, but they're not Scream. Right. They didn't have the you can see, and it happens in cinema a lot, something really good hits and everybody tries to replicate it by just changing the recipe a little bit. But when you don't have that proprietary like Wes Craven ingredient, it's not going to work the same. When you don't have the Kevin Williamson ingredient with the Wes Craven ingredient, you need those to make the food taste a certain way.
And I don't think the ingredients have all been mixed around to try to create a new palate item, but I feel like it's never hit like it did with this first one. Like the second one is cool, but it's not the first one. The third one was fun, but it's not the first one, you know?
Right. And it keeps going on like that. The fourth one I feel is where they really tried to reinvent it for a more modern time. Mm-hmm. And then you had the fifth one was just called I don't know. And then the sixth one is the most recent one, which was in New York. And that was okay.
I don't like it, dude. I just don't.
I like Jenna Ortega a lot. I think that's my problem. I'm such a fan of her that I can give it like certain movies. I might not even like the movie, but I'm like, Steve Buscemi's in this motherfucker. I don't care.
Right.
You know, and Jenna Ortega is kind of the same way. It's just like, I can watch you act, but the story by this time is so convoluted and so expected. We expect now in a Scream movie this, you know, weird twist ending. Well, we want it.
If you throw Dilbert Maroney in there, or you throw like a fucking like Christian Slater, whoever's going to be in there, fucking, you know, that's the killer. You're like, they casted the killer and they put him in the trailer. Like, we already know who it's going to be.
They'll even say they'll put 30 people on the poster and be like, the killer is on this poster somewhere. It's like, no shit. It's a Scream movie. We expect it.
There was not one fucking second that I didn't think that Patrick Dempsey was the killer in Thanksgiving.
Right, dude. Right. Like, every time. But now with the second Scream, I really did like the fact that this had become a movie. So now we have that whole other layer of fandom.
Yes.
In the movie. So we're watching the same people who are us, essentially the fans who are showing up to the theater to watch this stuff happen.
Right.
That's a great opening, though, too. The Jada Pinkett Smith and was it Omar Epps was with her? I think so. It might have been.
Yeah.
But he takes the fucking knife right through the stall wall in the bathroom. And that
the idea like, that you're not safe in a crowded movie theater. It was the thing that I really liked.
And that would come back to haunt us, dude.
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
Went and saw The Dark Knight Rises the day after it happened. And I just remember being uncomfortable in the theater and it was sad. I remember a sadness. Like I sat at the back when I was like ducked down low. I was like, who knows? You know what I mean? If some crazy fucker's gonna. And that broke my heart, dude. Like I can't imagine, especially a midnight showing. Like you've been to midnight showings. The energy there is so good.
You can feel it.
Everybody's there to celebrate. You know, we're here to celebrate our final installment of the Bats.
Right.
And because people, it's like that shit we're going through right now in Michigan, dude, with that Oxford shooter kid. Like he was texting his parents, like, I need help. Nobody will take me to the doctor. I'm going to shoot the fucking school up if you don't help me. And they're just like, oh, whatever. Right. Like, what kind of fucking monster are you? I'm glad his mom got fucking charged for that shit. Like, involuntary manslaughter or whatever. But yeah, scary times in a theater. But in this one, she just takes it right because everybody's wearing the ghost face masks.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I love, though, about that, too, is the movie within the movie where they show the clips of the movie that's being made. And it's fucking Tori Spelling as Sydney.
Yeah.
And, Luke Wilson plays Skeet Ulrich, and it's so funny.
They do it good, man. And then in like the fourth movie, you're watching a movie and then it pans out to like another movie and somebody's getting like Jenny McCarthy or some shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so 1996, though, how many Scream killer masks do you give this?
Dude, this has got to be a 5.
It's a 5 for me.
It's got to be. I watch it a million times. I never get bored of it. It's always clever, and I always find new things in it. The budget was probably low, but very well made. And this was at a time where horror, the budgets were just in the toilet, dude. Like, they wouldn't spend any money on it. They would just throw it out there on video and put a flashy cover on it and hope somebody rented it. This was like your first, like, let's get horror back in the theaters. Let's make it new and polished and use, up and coming talent. And it was Wes Craven, one of the old school guys, reinventing horror. He reinvented the slasher. And
he reinvented. Yeah. He reinvented in the 80s. He reinvented in the 90s. He just, continued to do cool shit. And he had some stuff out there that wasn't, you know, and then a couple years later when he would do Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Reinvented his own thing.
Oh shit, dude, like how do you take your own thing, completely flip it on its head, and then make it this whole awesome new thing, which is arguably one of the best in the franchise? Anything with his name on it are, you know, part 3, part 7, part 1 are the ones where usually people gravitate to, and right. They're like, yes, or Freddy versus Jason, because that shit is just fucking amazing. It's amazing in every way. So I'm with you. 5 out of 5. I think it's amazing, dude. It's amazing. It's wonderful. I don't know. Watch Scream.
It, for sure. I think they should stop.
I do,
it's
too.
It's done to death. Like, to death.
And the TV series was not very good. No, and I watched all of it, and I was just like, fuck. And then the most recent movie, same thing. But I will continue. That's the problem, is I'll continue
to
watch.
Stop. You have to stop. It's a sickness.
I told you the same thing about The Walking Dead, though. And you're like, I can't.
Oh, dude, can't. I'm watching The Ones Who Live right now.
I saw the thing come up because I've got the AMC Plus, and I always have to go to the Shudder thing, and you know they're always pushing it, yeah, like The Ones Who Live, and I'm like, let it fucking die.
I went into it. I was like, it's dead. Let me just check out this one last thing and see what they're doing with it. Rick loses his hand, and I'm like, I'm fucking back on board. We're back into the comic books. I love it. Thank you. Yeah.
But still,
yeah, no, it needs to end. But I just keep throwing money at it, dude. There's Saw at 10.
I like that most recent Saw. Like, of the last like 7 of them, I think that was probably one of the better ones. The newest one was good.
I have seen them all, and guess what? I can't tell you one fucking thing that happens from 2 to 10. I couldn't tell you a person that was in it. I couldn't tell you a scene that I really enjoyed.
But I've watched them all. I can't tell you, like, I know some of the main characters, but they all just keep showing up. Like, if you think fucking the movie we just talked about is twisty and turny, that Saw franchise, dude, like Amanda's all over the place, and then the detective motherfucker, and then all of a sudden, fucking, here's Cary Elwes shows back up. Yeah. He's here again. Yeah, it's all over. So, but Scream, top notch. 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5.
Okay, so let's get to the mindful part of the macabre and the mindful. And this is what I think you're gonna want to argue with me on.
Oh shit, here we go.
So this is something that, reflecting back on my life, I don't know if I would be fully diagnosable, but I don't know. I was probably a sex addict. Like, for real, dude. Like, for real. I mean, there were times, and these are low points in my life. I just want to share. These are low points in my life. But I'd fucking rub one out like 4, I don't know, maybe 5 times a day.
Dang, yeah. Pops.
It was bad. And then there are quite a few years in my life where I would just like chase it, dude. And I had some crazy, crazy experiences in my life when it comes to sexual experiences. I mean, crazy things. It was right when I kind of started this, you know, this mindfulness stuff, not right away, but the first thing I did was gave up watching any kind of porn. And for the longest time, I didn't see anything wrong with it. It's like everybody fucking does it, right? Like everybody watches smut here and there. Even if you're, you know, watching it with your fucking partner or some shit like that. Like everybody watches some smut. But I landed in this place, and I would say this has been about, you know, a solid couple years now. I landed in this place where, and now I don't even think about it. I don't really even question it, but there is never a lustful thought in my mind outside of my wife. And I did that purposefully, like very purposefully, because I was like, okay, I've explored everything else and it's all empty. And for anybody who's ever like watched porn in any kind of way, like you can go down some gross holes and then all of a sudden, like, you're, oh, wait, I just realized.
That's what she said.
But you know what I mean? It's like you finish handling your business. You're like, I feel like a piece of shit. I feel so gross. And that was me, dude. That was me 100%. I have no problem saying it now because I think there's a lot of people. Like, pornography has always been the biggest industry. Yeah. It's always been. When TV came out, porn sold the most. When the internet came out, porn is still, like, you know, the most websites on the fucking internet. It's everywhere. Magazines. Like, it was when print was big. That sold the most. It's always everywhere, so it's so accessible. But once I gave all that up, and you know, it's even walking down the street, you know, I can look at somebody and be like, that's a good looking human being, but it ends right there. You know, but I could say the same thing about a dude. I could be like, that's a handsome man right there. You know what I mean? You know, like, that's a fucking handsome man.
Yeah.
And but everything just kind of ends right there. But since doing that, like since completely cutting everything off, I'm having like the most amazing fucking sexual experiences of my entire life because it's solely focused on one thing. And so when I bring that to my wife, she's the sole object of everything. There's nothing in my mind I'm comparing anything to. I'm not thinking about something that, you know, that I did 20 years ago or some crazy shit that happened. Everybody talks about their spank bank. You know, there's certain things you keep in your spank bank, experiences you've had. Got rid of all that shit. Now it is, I can say without a doubt in my mind, what I feel exactly what it's supposed to be. Like when you're fully committed to one person and you eliminate the lust from everywhere else. Because the problem I found is, you know, when you get lustful like that, or when you bring any comparison, you're bringing that to the sexual experience. And so you say, oh, I want you to do this because I had seen somebody do this, or I want this because, oh, something turned me on that I looked at and that was, I was watching a movie and I want to do that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're bringing something else to it. Whereas when I'm just fully there with my wife, it's fucking unreal, dude. I don't know how else to explain it outside. It's just like, but it's such a fucked up idea because our culture, Shane and I, we've talked about this a lot and I've explained it to her. I've even talked to her, be like, yo, this is just the best shit ever. But you know, you'll see relationships where people will be like, oh, that's my celebrity cheat.
Right.
To me, that makes zero sense.
Right.
Because that means that I'm, you know, even if it is like a ha ha kind of funny, you're still living with that idea of that person is so attractive that I couldn't control myself if I was around that. And now you're comparing in a fucked up way to the person you have with you who loves you. And I promise you, if you bring none of that with you to your bedroom, that shit is unreal, dude. It is unfucking real. Like, it is the best. And like I said, I've done some wild shit in my days, but this is hands down. Like, if I could, like, I wish I would have not done a lot of those wild things, because I feel like when we have sex in any way, we leave a little part of ourselves with that person. And there's really no way to really, you know, separate that, some more than others. That, you know, if you're in a long relationship, you're with somebody for like 4 or 5 years, you're definitely leaving a lot more. But if you can, you know, hold off and save some of that for yourself. And it's fucking hard because our culture sells sex more than anything else. But, or even if you're in that place now, you're like, oh, I was a fucking slut all my life and I fucking left pieces of me everywhere. That's cool too. You could still get back to a good place. Like, I feel that. I feel that a lot, but you can still get back to a really good place with it and with whoever you're with now. Yeah, the more you can eliminate, but also I think that's just eliminating everything. Like, I'm trying to get rid of all of it and just be as selfless as possible. Like, cause I don't have to hold on to those ideas cause I don't exist in my past anymore. But this was probably one of the most impactful things where I was like, holy shit, dude, this is the way it's supposed to be. I know this is the way it's supposed to be, because it feels just, until somebody tries it, and then you'll be like, oh, fuck, I know what you're talking about, dude. But it took a long time, you know, especially because, like I said, you know, my dad was a fucking, I talked to my mom after the fact. I never knew my dad was a sex addict, like, and was, like, he would go to counseling and shit for it. Like, yeah. And I remember some of the first smut I ever saw was out in my dad's garage bathroom. Like, I looked under the cupboards and there were some pornos out there, you know what I mean? So I think part of me, that might have been genetic. Who knows? But you can break it off. Like, it's not something that, you know, oh, I'm stuck this way for the rest of my life, because it's just not that way.
Yeah, man.
So what do you?
I'm surprised that you thought that I would disagree with you, because I'm on the same page.
Tell me you're such a pervert. No,
that's the thing, is that my sense of humor is so dirty. But here's the thing, Pops Ghostly, that Scott Twatty has learned is that when I say sexually inappropriate things, it's so taboo in our culture, it always gets a fucking laugh.
Right, right, right.
Because people know, but they can't talk about it, or they don't feel comfortable talking about it. But I grew up not like you, where like I was going out there and fucking tossing it around all the time. I would say that I was probably hornier than most of my friends, though. I needed to be a sexual deviant. But I had no outlet for it, because like I had like the worst self-esteem, and just like I was just like, oh, I'm worthless. Like, no pretty chick would ever like have sex with me. And I was 100% in love with the women that I saw in movies. Like, since saw Labyrinth, I was in love with Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, I had some of those, dude. I was in love with Reese Witherspoon. I did have some of those.
All right, well, here's how much of a dork I was, though. At 22 years old, I had a picture of Jennifer Connelly next to my bed. I was married at 19 years old. Okay. Yeah, so bad. I married my high school girlfriend. She was the only girl that I'd ever, like, done anything with. Even kiss. She was my first kiss, dude. Dang. And I got married. Okay. And for 11 years, and I was following my parents' lead. My parents have been together for all these years. They met in church.
Right.
From what they say, they were there each other's firsts. So I was following what I was shown in real life. Like you meet a girl and you do whatever you can to be with her forever. And I think when I first met her, I was super in love with her. And the reason I started dating her is because she looked like Jennifer Connelly. And I was like fucking in love with her. And I was like, I'm going to fucking marry Jennifer Connelly. This is going to be awesome. What I didn't realize was that for like 11 years, I was like lusting over other women that I saw, other women that I knew. And just, gotcha. Yeah. And the whole time I'm just like, I wonder what another vagina feels like. Finally, back to your point is that, you know, finding somebody that you can be yourself with, that you actually have feelings towards, the act of sex is so much more intense and so much more emotionally, when you're there emotionally and physically, that is like what you're talking about, like the best. Right.
It is the best, dude. And mine was the exact opposite of you, dude. Like, I lost my virginity. Looking back on it, like, I got raped. Damn. Like, this girl threw me on the bed, dude, and was like, I'm putting this condom on you, and just jumped on my shit and started riding me like crazy. I was like, what the fuck is going on? When I was 16, I was working a job, and my fucking, looking back, she was 26, dude, like, took me to her house, got me drunk, and was fucking blowing me and shit. And I'm like, looking back, I'm like, what the fuck were you doing? And so my sexual experiences were really different, dude. It was a lot of like, and even really young, like I was prepubescent, and I remember the neighbor girl coming over and making her sister like blow on me and shit and was like telling us what to do. Like, it was, and I'm like, it was fucked up. Like, my introduction to what sex should be in life was fucked up, man. Like, it was really fucked up. And like you said, yeah, once you can bring it to that place where it's just a collective of you are the sole vision, like you're the only thing that my lust gets pointed towards.
Right.
And then you bring all the emotion with it because you don't feel like a piece of shit, you know, because, you know, you do. It's like, you fucking rub one out and then be like, oh, fuck. And then your wife's like, oh, and then you see her, you're like, oh, I was just fucking like wanting something else. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to see something else. And so you can't bring your full self when part of you is in that other place. So I think you're right on, dude. Yeah. I just always assumed the way you're like, I'm a fucking pervert.
No, yeah.
But you are right that a lot of jokes are that way, you know, sex is so, and the idea of, well, sex shouldn't just be pointed towards one person is such a part of our culture that it's kind of sad, because how many people are out there having bad sex? And I don't want bad sex. Like, I want to have fucking great sex.
Well, and that's the thing, is that like, I spent my whole life the opposite of you, where you were kind of like living a porno.
Right.
A lot of I was the opposite, where like, I was like, I can't enjoy sex because I feel like there's something else out there that I'm not experiencing.
Right, right.
And as it is, I've only been with 5 women. Luckily, the one that I met before my current wife was such a freak in the sheets that I had like all those weird experiences that I never thought I would have with this one person. And it was great. Don't get me wrong. It was great. And I was like, I bloomed and blossomed in a lot of ways. But I think that without that experience, I would have gone into my second marriage with that same fucked up hangups that like, well, I'm not experienced enough, or I don't know what else is out there.
If you find the right person, I think that's the thing. You find the right person, then you can explore all, like, hey, I want to try this. But if you trust each other and know that, like, hey, this is only going to happen here, I don't want this with someone else.
Right.
Then some people might be down. But I don't know about you. I can say with a great deal of confidence, like, a lot of the weird shit that people want to try, I don't ever want to try that shit again. Like, I'm like, fucking, that was too weird, dude. Like, I'm okay. I'm okay in my life. Like, I don't need all of that.
I don't. Yeah. Like, I don't want to bring pain into sexual intercourse. Like, I'm like, don't hurt me while we're doing this. Let's have a good time.
Been there. I'm not going to tell you. No, I'm not even going to bring that up. But I do have a scar one time from a cut that someone gave me that my doctor is convinced is a surgical scar because it is so clean. And I'm like, nah.
You could be like Jaws, dude. You could be like, I got this one when Debbie Downer was.
Right. But moral of the story, yeah. Keep your, if you can find a way to get to that place, it is, I would say, I can't imagine anything being better. Like, I can't imagine. And I do feel that people, you know, when they have that, they're desiring that, those experiences and things, or other people. It's, there's another emptiness inside that you're trying to fill with an external stimulation.
Absolutely.
You see it a lot. You know, the whole fucking, what was it called? Ashley Madison, where married people would cheat on their fucking spouses or whatever with each other.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of hole do you have in you? Because you're probably fucking wealthy. You're probably a business person who travels a lot. You probably have a great house with a great fucking bunch of kids and shit, but you're still trying to fill a hole that your ego is telling you, like, oh, I gotta experience this or experience that, and you'll experience it, but 9 times probably 10 times out of 10 you'll feel like trash when you're done.
You can never feel like a whole person when you've cheated on the person you're with, and you can never have that intimacy because you broke that chain of intimacy
by having
sex with somebody else, you know. And that shit feels awful too. That fucking eats at your soul, dude.
Dude, I cheated on my first wife a couple times. Fucking one time I don't even barely remember. I don't even know how I got home. I was so fucking drunk. I just remember like kind of coming to you and this lady's like fucking going down on me. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I'm in some weird house and I'm like, shit, awful. But then, yeah, coming to her, you know, and waking up the next morning and feeling like the worst human being on the planet, and telling her, because I can't carry that shit on my conscience, and telling her, be like, yo,
really,
I fucked up. Like, I told her like the next day or like 2 days later, you know, and we kind of worked through some shit. But that was also just my fucking alcoholism fucking running rampant. And but people would, like, even from the time I was a teenager, you know, women would take me and be like, oh, yeah, come on. You know, and I'm so fucked up, I don't know any better. I'm just like, oh, yeah, I'll fucking, I don't remember. Like, I'm blacked out drunk. And then you just come to and it's like, how the fuck did I get here? Why did you bring me here? You know, if the roles were reversed and I took some drunk chick home, and luckily that's nothing I ever did, unless we were both smashed and somehow ended up together. But if I like took somebody home from the bar and kept like feeding them, like, I remember times where women would like feed me drinks and shit and like get me drunk and try and fucking take me away and do shit to me. Like, if I did that, that's fucking rape.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So yeah, and a lot of those experiences, yeah, shaped a lot of, I don't know, it's just fucking crazy, dude. And there was times I remember dudes trying to take me home, and they're, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm just not a gay man. And they'd be like, oh, come on, let's drink. And one, he's like, I'll fucking blow you every day for the rest of your life, don't worry about it. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I don't want that, please. So yeah, anyway, where I'm at now, I think, is the place to be, you know, because you'll chase all that shit. You'll feel terrible after 90% of it. You'll fucking think the experience is going to make you feel like a whole person, but really the only thing that'll make you feel whole is fully giving yourself to one person, fully, wholly, in every single way, give yourself to that person and try and find that person. You know, don't stay in a miserable fucking relationship. If you're in one, be adults about it, separate, and then wait till you do find that person where you can feel, because the emotional connection, like you said, has to be so strong first before you can even tell yourself like, hey, I want to just solely devote myself to you. So make sure that shit's right. Anyway, episode 19, Horror Pop Extravaganza.
Wow. I feel like we went somewhere and then just like cut it off halfway through getting to the final place. Like, we had a destination.
That's right.
And we just stopped and we're like, we live here now. And I don't know how I feel about that.
That's what our podcast is. That's what our podcast is. Said it was two things. It's where the mindfulness or where the macabre meets the mindful. I don't think anyone else, dude, we might be an original, this idea, because I don't know if anybody else has brought horror and fucking like well-being together to be one solid thing.
I definitely know no one has ever talked about Scream and then like fucking like right together like that.
Right. Never. All right. So for the Horror Pop Extravaganza, I've been Pops Ghostly.
I'm Scott Twatty.
And we will talk to you next week.